says a major hazard to success has been your involvement with your past and future goals. I want to take a minute to really be with that sentence. It says a major hazard to our success has really been our concern with our future goals, which is diametrically opposite to the way we're taught, which is the key to success is having future goals. So it says that we've been totally preoccupied with how different the goals that the course keeps setting for us are different from the kind of goals we had before. Before I got into the course, my goal was to usually have more better body comforts. Anybody else?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I'm working for more money. I want a better house, a better car, a better mate. You know, a better something to make my body more comfortable. So the course says we might be concerned with how, or we might have had the goal to hold a grievance. We might have had a goal that I want to hang on to this grievance, so I want to hang on to my past, so I want to hang on to this anger that I feel towards somebody. We just had a different goal than the Course in Miracles is trying to give us. And it says that, and we also get depressed by thinking about how we would just probably mess up again. Even if we did get it right one time, we might go back and do the same thing all over again. And it says that whenever you worry about not doing it right, or you worry about what might happen in the future, or what might happen, or what happened in the past, it says that this is nothing but a defense against changing your mind right now. He says it's a defense against present change of focus and perception. He said because the past is gone, so what's the point of worrying about that? And the future hasn't happened yet. So when you're thinking about the past and thinking about the future, the Course says it's just a plan that you have to keep from applying the truth in your life right now. Everybody with me on that? I said again, because I want to get this. Every time I'm concerned about the past or concerned about the future, according to the Course, it's just a defense against changing my perception and changing the focus of my perception right now. For instance, if I'm upset with Chuck, and I think about what Chuck did to me in the past, I'm going to use Chuck for a while. We got past life stuff to get past. So, yeah, Chuck knows it. That's why we laugh so much. Yeah. Well, basically, the Course says the only thing that attracts you to anybody is a grievance.
No.
Yes, it does. That the reason why you single somebody else out over anybody else is because they're reminding you of something in the past that's attracting you, that this person has to make up for what the other person didn't do. This person is going to give you something that the other person didn't give you. So you really enter in the agreement. You actually enter in the relationship with the grievance because you enter in the relationship with the attitude that this person's got to make up for something that didn't happen in your past. Or make it better. Yeah, any relationship. In a relationship, oh, why would I single you out? If I didn't think you were going to take care of a special need that I have, why would I single you out? Why would I choose you and not somebody else? If I have a special need for a girlfriend, and let's just say I'm primarily into girls, then I'm going to exclude everything that's not a girl. And I'm going to try to get with the girl based on my past learning and my past experience. And she's going to have to give me what nobody else before her gave me. I call it wanting this relationship to be better than the last one. And that's me having a desire to be fulfilled in this relationship that never got fulfilled in the other relationships. So I'm actually entering the relationship based on a grievance. I'm not entering the relationship out of total satisfaction. I'm entering the relationship out of a desire or wish or a need to be fulfilled by that person. That nobody else is fulfilled. You see what I'm saying? But the point of this paragraph, and I really want to get the point of this paragraph, is it's telling us that whenever we are thinking about the past or the future, it's just a way to keep from applying the truth right now. That's what I was getting ready to say about Chuck. If I'm thinking about something he did in the past, or if I think about trying to be peaceful and loving with him right now, he might hurt me in the future, which some of us think, well, if I forgive this person, they might do it again. He says, what is that doing? Well, that's nothing but a defense to keep me from forgiving him right now. Mm-hmm. That's just a defense to keep me from practicing the truth on him right now. I'm thinking about what he might do to me in the future and what he might do to me in the past, not realizing that if I truly forgave him in the present, he couldn't hurt me in the future. He really wouldn't hurt me in the future because forgiveness heals. If we ever really did it. It would heal the situation. I think sometimes we forget that there are like invisible laws and psychic and spiritual forces beyond our physical perception. And so, therefore, we don't know the power of forgiveness at a divine level. at a spiritual level, at a metaphysical level. We think of everything, but I'm just going to talk this way. We think of everything in terms of physical. So the Course says we don't have spiritual sight because we believe that what we can't see doesn't exist. And that's spiritual blindness. That's the same as saying you think the only thing that exists is what you see. So he says that's denial of spiritual sight. So we don't realize that forgiveness gives a power greater than us the opportunity to enter our experience and create a healing. So if I really forgave Chuck, not our phony kind of forgive, but I mean really forgave Chuck, then Chuck and I would be healed and wouldn't be an attack on me in the future, wouldn't be any reason for me to wonder what he's going to do to me if I really forgave. It's not phony forgive. That's really forgive. Okay. If you phony forgive, you can tell. Because if you phony forgive, you have the same situation pop up again.
What form does your relationship with Chuck then assume at that point?
You couldn't tell what form the relationship would take if you would know the content of the relationship, and the content of the relationship would be I feel peace with Chuck. See, the form is not knowing the exact form is the fun of being here. You see what I'm saying? So if anybody try to tell you the exact form something's going to take, then to me that can't be done. I can't tell you the form it can take, but I can tell you the content. If I've forgiven you, the content's going to be peace. And if peace is the center, it really doesn't matter what form it takes because we're going to be cool no matter what's happening between us.
Well, that you answered my question because I was using the word term form loosely, and you asked by saying peace.
Yeah. Well, peace is the content.
Okay.
Form would be whatever me and Chuck did together, where we went out and had a drink, whether we went to the park,
okay,
whether
so
we went to the movie.
Form.
Yeah, that's form.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
And the anticipation, I hate to use that word, would be that there would be a reciprocation.
Well, if I really forgave
the resonance of that peace,
if I truly forgave him, I would have peace. And
yeah,
so, and that would be all that mattered.
Right.
It wouldn't matter whether or not he'd done anything. And see, that's what I'm saying. But once I choose for peace, then I'll have peace. And so I'll have peace with Chuck. The content of my relationship with Chuck will be peace.
And I guess for me, I'd like to
be assured is that it'd be a mutual
not,
kind
not
of thing.
Not really sure, but to experience.
Oh, you? I think you would.
The mutual peace, the harmony at that point that has moved beyond the grievance.
Well, that's been my experience, but I couldn't promise that would be everybody else's experience. But that's been my experience. My experience has been every time I change my mind, my relationship to whoever it was physically outside of myself changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's been my experience. Even if the other person wasn't involved in my forgiveness process. Even if they weren't. But
sure.
I'm not gonna make that a condition of me forgiving. You know, I'm not going to make my condition on giving me peace be conditional on whether or not you also feel okay with me,
right,
or if I'm stuck again. So I'm not going to make it that way. You see what I'm saying?
That doesn't matter.
No, I'm not going to. Every time I can come up with a solution that doesn't have anything to do with anybody else, that's the one I want. Really, to be quite honest, that's the way I look at things. Whatever solution that I can have in my life that doesn't involve getting y'all involved, that's the one I want. Because the minute that solution is based on your cooperation, then I've set it up where somehow or another I got to get you to do something I want you to do. And I don't want to set my life up anymore on that premise of my happiness can't happen unless somebody else agrees with me. But what's weird about that is ever since I took that attitude, I've had more people in my life who agreed with me and cooperated with me, which is a trip to see happen. It's like the minute you sincerely don't make that a requirement, then everybody's like, what can I do? How can I help you? How can I support you? You know, how can we have peace together? It's amazing to watch, but it's such a subjective experience that unless you have that experience, it'll sound like a fairy tale. Because in your reality, you're not experiencing no cooperation from nobody. But maybe if you be honest with yourself, you're also making your happiness somehow dependent on their cooperation or them acting out your particular wishes, too. If you be honest with yourself, that's where anger comes from. Anger comes from, the Course says, somebody not acting out your script. That's why I'm mad all the time. Because all these scripts I have aren't being acted out. So I'm trying to arrange my life now where my happiness doesn't depend on anybody else acting out my script. And if you don't get a whole lot of help with that goal, in terms of people like going, yay, that sounds great, you know, let's really do that, you know, because, you know, so much of our happiness seems to be dependent on we hoping somebody will change. in some way. So people are not really attracted to a teaching that's totally based on them changing. This is not the most popular curriculum in town, if you haven't noticed, okay? You know.
What about the difference between amends and forgiveness?
What now?
What's the difference between amends and forgiveness?
Well, amends would be you trying to do something to make that person feel okay about what you did to them. So you're still somehow trying to get them involved in the process. And I'm not saying that that's wrong. Don't get me wrong. All I'm saying is true forgiveness brings peace within yourself. And if anybody else cooperates with it, that's beautiful, but don't make that a requirement. So that's not saying I wouldn't make amends or I wouldn't be willing to do whatever I want to do in, I call that form. Whatever I want to do in form, that's okay. Whatever we decide we want to do in form, that's okay. But we just want the content to be peace. We want the content. So the Course in Miracles is content-centered. The Course in Miracles is not form-oriented. It's totally it's wholly about the content, the purpose, the goal, as it calls it. And he says that's what makes it different. It's a course about cause. It's not about the effect. The form is always the effect level. The physical level is always after something has been caused. And so the course is trying to get us to work at the causative level, the level of what causes it in the first place. Not, it's already happened and now I'm trying to fix it. Most time when people ask for my help and probably when they ask for your help, they're asking for help in an effect that they've already made. And if you start talking to them at the causative level, they get off the phone. If you go, well, you know, you had a part in that, or your consciousness created that, or that's somehow related to your beliefs, and you need to change your mind if you really want that situation to change. If you want to get people to stop calling you and asking you for help, say that about 5 times in a row when they call you. And I guarantee you, unless they're really ready to change, they will not call you again when they're going through any more misery about anything. Trust me on that. But if you try to solve their problem at the effect level, at the ego level, they're going to call you every time they have a problem. So don't ever try to solve anybody's problem at the level of the ego. But you want to give them the real solution, which is at the level of mind. But the ego is not going to like that. So the ego is not going to pick up the phone and call you. So if they do call you, then it means their spirit is taking over. Enough of them to call somebody who's going to talk to them about them having the power to change it. See what I'm saying? So you already know that person other than the phone is really coming from Holy Spirit because they want to talk to you about the true cause. If the person is calling you and they want to talk to you about from the level of form, then they're probably calling from their ego. If they don't want to hear the real cause. And so they won't call you back until they really want the real answer. And so you'll therefore be helping the people you can help, and then the people that you can help, they'll be going somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so everything's cool. So it's not saying that you're not being helpful. You're just finally being helpful to the people you can really be helpful to. And you won't feel like you're making a sacrifice when you help them because you'll finally be telling them what you really want to say. If you'll be honest with yourself, the reason why you probably get tired of talking to your friends and stuff about problems is that you're probably not saying to them what you really want to say. Yeah. You're really saying to them what you think they want to hear. You're trying to couch it in a way that doesn't hurt their feelings. And you're doing all this extraneous stuff that makes you not want to, that makes it just a hassle. But if you call me up and I could say what I really thought about your problem, I'd be energized when I got off the phone. But most of the time, I'm tempted not to do that. Because I'm concerned about how it's going to be received by that other person. So I don't want to hear it. So you go, I don't want to hear it. And the reason why I don't want to hear it is because I'm not going to tell you the truth. If I could tell you the truth, I could hear it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah, just try it sometime. Watch the people you don't mind helping versus the people you feel like a sacrifice. And you notice one of them you really feel free to communicate your real thoughts with, and the other one you're probably feeling like you can't really express yourself the way you really want to.
Or they might get offended. Telling somebody that they're in self-pity or selfishness or, mm-hmm. You don't really want to tell them that because it might hurt their feelings.
Exactly. So you might want to say, boy, I wish you would really stop wallowing in your self-pity. But you won't say that. You'll say something else. And that's what makes the relationship a strain because you're not saying what you really want to say. And the Course says that. You know what's a trip about that? The Course says that in turn makes you be in conflict. Because now you're not being honest about what you think or feel. So now they're in conflict and they call you and now you're in conflict. So you felt better before they called. And so next time when you see them on the call ID, you go, I don't know about that. You know, there's some people you take a minute before you call them back. As soon as you see their name, you know, you need to go, need to wait a minute. Not that I'm not going to respond to your call, but I know I need to be in the right mental attitude before I talk to you. And so I might need to take a minute to pray before I return the call. I got a call like that the other night. It was a very powerful call, but I knew that I needed to take a minute and get ready. You know what I'm saying? So I could really be there. So I could be 100% there. You don't have to answer the phone every time somebody calls you. I don't know what that rule came from. Where that rule came from. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of wild. Because, you know, back in the old days when there wasn't no call ID and all that kind of stuff, you know what I'm saying? You just, you know, if you were doing something, you just didn't answer the phone. And then, you didn't feel guilty about it. See, that was a good sound effect. You know, I'm talking about phones. Then, you know, we worked that out that he was going to do that exactly 12, 23. I was going to be talking about phones and then.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, again, we don't take advantage of the freedom that we have, and it's all about the purpose. It's like why did I wait a minute so I could be 100% present? You know, and then if I'm with someone, I want to give the person I'm with all my attention. So I'm not going to get in a conversation with somebody else on the telephone while I'm with you. I'm going to talk to you. We're 100% present. Nobody's more important than the person that's there. Not the person that's not there. Everything that's powerful, the Course says, is always available to you with the people who are in your life right in this moment. So there's nothing more powerful that I can receive from anyone else than I can receive from this group of people right now, because you're the one that's in my experience right now. So if I go anywhere else other than this room, then I'm going where my power isn't located. And so one way you can make sure that you get present, so you can get the power out of every encounter, is to make sure you're listening to the person that's talking, because to listen, you have to be present. So if you want to be present, all you have to do is anybody you're with, start listening to them, and you won't have to worry about being in the past or the future. You'll be right there at the most powerful intersection point that you can have with that person. It's little simple things like that that I've learned through the Course. It's just been so helpful. How do I get present? Listen. Because if I'm really listening and not figuring out what I'm going to say next after you get through talking, then I'm 100% present with you. So I'm where I can get the message that God wants to give me, because now I can hear it because I'm listening. Okay. So I'm going to go a little bit further on this. I covered this on Sunday, part of it, but right now I'm in a phase with the Course in Miracles that I really want to get it. I really want to remember it. And you can't hear it too much is what I've learned. Have you noticed? No matter how many times you hear it, have you noticed you forget it? Mm-hmm. Have anybody else noticed that beside me?
Yeah.
If you're not constantly reminded, you forget it. So that's why I keep doing this over and over. People, how can you keep doing this for so many years? Because I want to remember it. I'm in a world where no one will tell me something like this too quick. Mm-hmm. I need to make sure I remember it. And so I need to remember that, Earl, if you're thinking about the past or the future in this situation that you're in right now, it's nothing but a defense to keep you from applying the answer right now. You're afraid to apply the truth to this situation right now. He says that's nothing more. He said, we lay these pointless limitations by a little while. We do not look to past beliefs. I love that. Do not look to what you believed in the past. And what we will believe will not intrude upon us now. So I'm not only going to let what I used to believe interfere with this moment I'm having with you. I'm not going to even let what I might believe in the future. Like, for instance, if I meet a new person, and this I apply practically. If I meet a new person, then I got to not let what I went through with other people in the past be brought into this moment. And I also can't sit up there with you as a new person thinking about what you might do to me. See, that's thinking about what I might believe in the future. Because that will keep me from being in a peaceful, loving, safe place with you right now. Because I'm already looking for you to hurt me one day. So I can't even appreciate you right now if I'm thinking about what you might do to me. The hardest thing after a relationship sometimes is to trust again and to open up again. Especially if you feel like you were deceived in some way. And it takes a lot of spiritual strength to always remind yourself that whoever else you're meeting after that person is not that person. I mean, you really have to remind yourself, this is not the person that I was with in the past. This person did not do to me what I think the other person did to me in the past. So I won't be close to them because I'm defending against what I think I might experience in the future based on what I went through with somebody else. See how sad delusional that is? But it sounds real sane to the ego. You know, Earl, I'm going to be careful with, I'm going to be real suspicious of you when I go out with you because, you know, Phil over there, he cheated on me. But I'm not Phil. You need to really get. That's not an abstract concept. I'm not Phil. See, and that's what the Course is saying. To me, that's what the Course is saying. Everybody read it, they get their own stuff out of it. But I believe that people are coming to my classes and something about the way it comes through me is what I'm supposed to say. I'm weird like that. But you follow me? So if you go through a relationship and you were hurt in that relationship, your temptation is going to be suspicious of every new person that you meet, thinking that they're going to do to you what the other person did to you. So you're going to focus on what happened to you in the past, and that's going to keep you from seeing this new person that you're with right now. And we all know what you focus on, you're much more likely to make, create, perceive, and experience than what you don't. So how does that work out in the real world? It works out this way. You will not be attracted to a person who would treat you with integrity and love, and you will be attracted to the person that would deceive you and fool you, and so therefore it will seem like you were right about not trusting. But you don't know that it was your own focus that drew that person to you in the first place that wasn't untrustworthy, just like the last person wasn't.
And you had a primary role in that happening.
You were the primary because of your focus. Your focus created the person. They didn't come out of the clear blue sky. They came after my thought, after my belief, after my consciousness, they showed up. So how do I break that vicious cycle? I got at some point go, you're not the person that I was with in the past. I'm gonna open my heart and I'm gonna give what I want to receive, and I'm gonna make it okay for you to also be a no good person that fools me too, because I know I'm just now trying to change my focus, so I might mess up a few times before I actually see the benefit of me being open again. You follow me? Because the Course says the hardest part is the beginning, so you're much more likely to fail when you first start. So if you judge whether or not to go forward by the first failure, then you're overlooking the fact that you're probably going to have a first failure because you're defending against doing this new thing anyway. And what better excuse for me not to trust a woman again would be for me to try again and then get disappointed again and stop, rather than realize I am so afraid to open up that I want women I can't trust, because then I'm justified in never opening up, which I'm afraid to do anyway. So if I'm afraid of intimacy, I'm going to always attract someone who won't be intimate with me, so I can say I want to do it, but the truth is with somebody that's not intimate, I feel justified in not opening up. So I can think I want to be intimate and be afraid of it as I can possibly be.
I think you just defined a circle.
Yeah, you follow me? You see what I'm saying? When you around people all the time, they always talk about, well, I wish my partner was more open, and I wish there was more loving, and I wish there was more intimate, and I wish they really communicated, and you're hearing all that kind of stuff. As a person that's afraid to do that themselves, who has a partner that gives them an excuse for not opening up, so they can think they're really more open than they really are. Because if you really needed to communicate, you wouldn't stay in a relationship with a person you couldn't communicate with. Your desire to communicate would be so strong that either it would either trigger communication in the relationship that you're in, or would draw you to a relationship where you could communicate. But it certainly wouldn't stay stagnant. So if you're in a situation that stays stagnant, it's because whatever the problem is, it's your problem. You know, if I say there's no intimacy between us and I stay with you forever and there's no intimacy between us, then the no intimacy I see in you is my problem. Because if I truly wanted intimacy, truly as a child of God, I can't want anything that would not occur as a child of God. Right? Right? Because I'm powerful. So if I truly wanted communication, communication would happen. So I need to admit to myself, I don't want communication. Work on whatever blocks there are within me that's keeping me from communicating so that I can get out of that stagnant trap. So I would immediately take my focus off my partner, and I would see what it was in me that's making me stay in this state that creates this opposition, and just take the focus off of them altogether. Which would probably go a long way toward creating the communication and intimacy, because you're not on their case. That's got to help. You know, you're not giving me no hard time. That's got to help in our communication. Just you taking your focus off of blaming me is going to help our communication. Besides the fact that I'm going to faint because you're owning it. I'm about to pass out just because you got off my case and admitted it might be something in your mind that needs to change. I would like go, woo, was this a walk-in? Because I think I've had experiences in my life with walk-ins where there were other people that just walked right inside of this body of this person that I used to be in a relationship with. I don't know about you, but I've had relationships that the people have changed so radically from the person I thought I knew when I first met them that it seems like I was in a relationship with another person. I don't think that's a strange experience for those of us in human relationships. Have anybody else ever had that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You almost swear it was another person. Might be. But you can have a cool walk-in happen too now. It's like, yeah, you could just keep that body but have a whole new mind. I'd be so happy. You know what I mean? Oh, Lord, just keep the body, Lord, but just please give him a whole new mind. Please. And the course is saying, no, go for the mind, and the mind will create the perfect body for you. That's easier. It's a lot easier. Okay.
I always find out I'm married bipolar women.
Interesting. Interesting. I think we all bipolar. there's a totally split. There's a split. The Course says we have a split mind. And if you ever start waking up spiritually, you'll realize you do have an evil twin. You do have an insane, scary, suspicious, doubtful, freaked out, negative side of your mind. It's the other you. And it has its whole world. Just like the cool you has its whole world. And you'll start to see yourself going back and forth between the world of the cool you and the world of the insane you. Some people, you'll be totally in the insane world. Just immediately. Bam! As soon as you see them, y'all go straight to insane land. Y'all know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't care how good you feel.
Yeah.
When you see them, somehow or another, God becomes an abstract concept. Love becomes something that, you know, and you just almost like you can't help it. You're just gone. You know, because they with them, you choose to go into this other part of the mind that sees the fear. And then there are other people, as soon as you see them, you go into this feeling of total safety and total peace and, oh, I know I'm okay and I can be myself. And everything around you changes. The waitress is nice. The waiter is nice. The person lets you go in traffic. You get unexpected check in the mail. You know what I'm saying? Somebody tell you they want to have hot, passionate sex with you you've been dreaming about for years and years. And no telling what might happen. You know what I'm saying? And, you know. I think that's fun to have. Anybody else?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, spiritual students don't have sex. I keep forgetting that. You get on the spiritual path, sex doesn't exist on the spiritual path. I forgot.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, me too. Oh, God. Okay. Is it scary to trust? Is it scary to not bring the old beliefs and the new beliefs into the situation that's brand new? Doggone right, it's scary. All right, so if you try for the first time, what would be the best attitude to have? If you're trying to trust for the first time, who can tell me what they think would be the best attitude to have since you know you're trying to look at something different from the way you always looked at it, and you know you're kind of afraid because they might do the same thing again? What did I say in your own words? What did I say about how you would deal with the first time you really try to make a major change?
You're going to fuck up.
Thank you.
It's okay.
Okay. Thank you very much. Don't attach yourself to the outcome. You might mess up the first time you do it because you know you're scared to do it anyway in a part of you really don't want to trust. So what could be better justification than to try to trust and fail again? Look like the person wasn't trustworthy. So when you try to open up for the first time, you want to put yourself in a state of mind where you would be okay no matter what the person did. You would be okay if they weren't trustworthy. You are going to still be okay. And that's the way you should really look at every situation. It's like if that situation went the worst it could go, what way could you look at it that would still make it okay? In your case, you would say, I created it. But it would make you unafraid to go ahead and have more experiences. What keeps us from having an exciting life is we don't want to make any mistakes. And you want to see the dullest person you ever want to be with? Be with somebody that's afraid to make mistakes. They don't do anything.
Yep.
They don't do anything different. They don't do anything new. They don't do anything because they're so afraid something might not turn out right, or they might make a mistake, or they might be disappointed. So they just relive what they've already done over and over and over again without trying anything new, and they bore you to death. Anybody know any people like that? You know exactly what they're going to do before they do it. Before you go see them, you know what they're going to say. You know how they're going to act. You know, you just know. You know them. You know it's sad. But the exciting people are the ones that you don't know when the rabbit's going to pop out the hat. Right? And you don't mind because you know there's safety between you. So if there's safety and love between you, you don't mind the surprises because you know it's going to be a pleasant surprise. So your life becomes exciting. And you know if you mess up, then y'all will get over it because you like each other so much. You aren't going to let... There are people in my life I like so much, I won't let nothing come between us. And there are people I don't like that I let anything come between us. Because I don't want to be around them. I forgive you. So remember, forgiveness does not mean you have to take them out to lunch. Okay? Because that keeps a lot of people from wanting to forgive. They think that means they have to hang out with the person.
Be their friend again.
And be their friend again. You know, and you're like, that's not necessary to forgive me. You don't have to contact me physically to forgive me. Always remember that. Isn't that cool? I mean, that's the hard part about forgiveness is the person, isn't it? If you can leave them out, forgiveness is a cinch. We got it made. You mean forgiveness doesn't involve the person I need to forgive? No. Well, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. I have faith. All right. I never get tired of this book. So then he says that we're going to enter in the time of practicing with one intent to look upon the sinlessness within. I'm going to say innocence. The innocence within. Okay, so it says we recognize that we've lost the goal. I love this. Earl, you lost the goal. How can you tell? Because you're all pissed off. That's what the course would call anger blocks our way. I just thought I would paraphrase. Okay. When I was in Memphis, I would have a Friday evening course class where I would set it up like a nightclub and put little tables out in the center, put a sign up that said it was X-rated, and have total uncensored conversation like you're talking to adults. And it was unbelievably powerful. Because all X-rated means to me is that I can just talk and you can just talk. Without us feeling like we need to censor ourselves. So then some real conversation happens. But as long as you're trying to talk to a bunch of folk where they get all upset whether you use profanity and they get upset if you don't say it the way they would say it, how can some real communication happen if I'm having to watch everything I say before I say it? How can a flow happen if I'm trying to make sure that everybody in the room doesn't judge what I get ready to say? So I set up classes where people didn't even walk through the door unless they were already open to whatever you have to say, however you say it. Then some real healing and communication happened. The people who still freak out on words wouldn't show up. And so they felt safe, which is cool. That's all right. You know, that's okay. I'm not saying that, you know, that it's not okay for you not to want to hear certain things based on what you taught yourself about those words. You know, so just since you realize that you're the one that's giving yourself the feeling about those words don't mean anything. You got to give them the meaning they have. So, you know, nothing nobody says means anything, you know, until I give it the meaning. And that's powerful. So I used to practice saying the words to myself that were most offensive until I learned that I was the one giving those words power. And then I took the power away from it. That's what I did with the word nigger. It was my first metaphysical word that I used for enlightenment. I had to take the power away from the word nigger, which is a popular word in the South. Might be up here, but it's not as open as it is in the South. I don't know. That's what I like about the South. People just come up and just tell you, hey, nigger. You know, but, you know, other places people try to think it but won't say it. You know, pretend that they don't think it but do. You know, so it's like a lot, at least the South is a lot more open about the insanity. And so, you know, if I see a guy in a Ku Klux Klan outfit, I pretty much figure he might not like me.
we might have to work through a few things. We might have a few issues to work through, you know what I'm saying? But who is the guy in the Ku Klux Klan outfit? It's me in the Ku Klux Klan outfit.
I like a wolf in wolf's clothing more than I do in sheep's clothing.
Absolutely. And the course says that to many people that will come to a class like this, I am the devil in the cloak of an angel. That they would look at anybody that would tell any group of people that they were totally innocent, sinless, and guiltless, that was the devil, because anybody knows that we're really guilty and sinful and born in sin. So I would therefore be seen as the devil in disguise as this really nice, cool teacher of the truth. Interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People who aren't ready to accept their innocence yet are totally suspicious of anyone that loves them.
Would you just repeat what you just said, right? Something you said a little back.
I have no idea what I said. I have to buy the CD. I promise you, I don't know what I'm saying. That's why you should always come to the class. I'm letting it come through, and I'm just as amazed and in awe of what comes out of my mouth as anybody that's sitting in this room. Because I have to leave out of this room, and I have to apply it to my personal life just like everybody else does. Yeah.
Now, I can sit here and I can see myself as my father or my stepmother,
mm-hmm,
or a boss I might have had. But I have just huge resistance to seeing myself as a Ku Klux Klan person, or George W., or, I mean...
Right. Right.
I'm just not
right.
That way.
Right. That's what I'm saying. As long as... As long as you deny that there are parts of your mind that has prejudice, then you keep meeting and seeing a world with prejudiced people in it.
That's part of that insane mind you were talking
about.
Yeah,
that's the shadow. Yeah, and so when, if I own... See, to own my shadow doesn't mean that I'm using my shadow. And if I want to get rid of darkness, all I have to do is turn on the light. And the light dispels the darkness automatically. So when we come into gatherings like this, we're turning on the light. So we're dispelling that shadow. And then you see less and less... Well, here's an extreme example. I mean, based on what I was taught as a black youth growing up in the 50s, I certainly wouldn't be getting 99% of my support from people in white bodies talking about there is no sin. You see what I'm saying? So I'm experiencing the polar opposite of everything that I was taught as a child, which shows me that because I was willing to think differently, then I'm not hanging around Ku Klux Klan members. You see what I mean? But all those brothers and sisters that I got and friends, and a lot of friends I know and people I know in black bodies that see you as the enemy, and they're always attracting the vicious cops, and they're always attracting the white folk that don't like them. And I see it all the time. I'll watch it play itself out totally. I'll meet Officer Friendly. How can I help you, sir? You know, and another friend of mine would tell me how he was thrown on top of a car and beat. You see what I'm saying? But he would also be the same friend that was hated the cops. And saw cops as the end, right? I see that stuff. See, I'm the kind of person, I watch and I observe and I try to learn from other people's experiences. And I kept seeing that correspondence, that difference between the attitude I had and then the kind of experience I was having with beings in white bodies,
mm-hmm,
and the kind of experiences that my other brothers and sisters in black bodies were having with beings in white bodies. And the only thing that I saw that was different was I was not judging people consciously by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character, and they were automatically thinking if they white, then they, you know, you need to watch out because they white, and so they would get to watch out white people. When I was one of those first blacks. There was a lot of them back in the 70s. Don't say it's close you get to being the president. I guess I'm the first black, and so I was the first black that worked for Bell South, that was the supervisor of half of Memphis. And I was 26. And the person that promoted me had the reputation for being the most racist person at the phone company. But I had just gotten into metaphysics and I had just gotten into the truth. And so I would try to practice the stuff that I was practicing. I would try to practice stuff I was learning own when I would go into the workplace. Because one of the things that I always hear from people on the path with Earl, if you had to go out here and deal with the world like we do, you just do Course in Miracles classes and that's all you have to do, so you don't really have to deal with the stuff that we do out here. It don't really work. I used to hear that all the time, right? So I'm like, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. I got two kids that's in school. I'm married, so I know about that, you know what I'm saying? And I got the bills and I got everything else and I'm working at the job. But what I noticed was, when I went to the job with the attitude of, what could I do to make my boss's day easier? That was the weirdest thing. How can I walk in this room and make sure we both win? Then, and I saw how this was a person that really, really, really liked to be controlling and in charge and tell people what to do. So whenever he would try to come out on my job when I was a telephone repairman and tell me what to do before I got promoted and all that kind of stuff, I would just go, yeah, please show me exactly what to do. I really appreciate what you're showing me. Now, what is it that I... Because really, he did know more than me. So really, it was like a smart move. You know, it wasn't like really egotistical. And then he was not used to resistance. He wasn't used to somebody not resisting. So he would be happy to show me. And so a lot of times, he would do the whole job. And I would just sit up there and I would watch and I would learn a whole lot. So what happened was, because of the attitude that I had toward him, he stopped watching me, and he started watching all the people I noticed that was giving him the hard time. So they would be the ones that he was right there around the corner peeping to see if they went too long when they break and how long he was on the job. And he left me totally and completely alone because I wanted peace between us. And that was way back then, you know. People would ask me, what is it that you want in the situation? And I would tell my crew, I'd say, you know, what I really want is peace. So my nickname was Peace. So everybody, all my coworkers called me Peace. They would just say, hey, Peace. Or they would call me Peace Purdy. Or they would call me Mr. Peace. So I was in a reality where everybody in the world was calling me Peace, and therefore I was having more peace because I was bringing them peace by not dealing with them the way that everybody else was. So yeah, these principles do work if you apply them. Mm-hmm. But they won't work if all you're talking about is how that will never work because of my boss, my sister, my mother, my father, which we just heard was the defense against present change of focus and perception, which is looking at thinking about what's going to happen if you do this. And he says, that's why you don't get the result. It works if you apply it. If it's not working, I guarantee you, you're not applying it. And there are some areas of my life that it doesn't seem to work. And in some areas, it doesn't seem to work. And it's been that way for a long time. And I realized that the Course says those areas, there's two things happening. He said those areas that it looked like the problem isn't getting solved, it's still the area you're trying to solve them by yourself. Mm-hmm. And he said the area that the problem doesn't get solved, it's still another way you're trying to punish yourself. Mm-hmm. And so keeping that problem and that pain going is your way of punishing yourself. He says, and those would be the problems that look like they're unforgivable or nothing you can't change. Those are just the areas where I'm still trying to have it my way without applying the truth that I'm learning for real. And so he says, and the Course follows it up by saying that is not a sin. Okay, don't beat yourself up about that, because there's no such thing as a problem that will not be solved. There's no way you're going to stay in pain forever. So don't worry about that. One day you're going to go, he says, you're going to say to yourself, there must be a better way. And then you'll really do it. So don't worry about that. So if you do have a place that you're stuck, keep applying the truth in the areas that you don't feel stuck. And I guarantee you, you're going to let go of your desire to suffer in the area that you've still been stuck in, if you let yourself have the happiness in the other areas. Okay? All right. Well, I'm going to stop here. And, yeah. Mm-hmm.
If we can begin to accept our innocence, our personal innocence, mm-hmm. then if we can look at anyone and know and understand that we're innocent even though we're product of an insane world.
Right.
And understand that whatever problems we're having with anyone else, they're the product of an insane world.
Yes.
And that's just what they've been taught.
Yes.
I call it, there's just one ego and we all have it.
To their innocence.
Here's your ego.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm here. I'm just holding it up. Say what you're saying. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what's really brought this to me, Candace said something a minute ago about Bush, my biggest obstacle. And I checked out of the library, this book called Bush on the Couch.
Mm-hmm.
And you get into his childhood and the product he is of parents who are emotionally unavailable, and you start to feel some compassion for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And it's given me a whole different perspective. I've said that's my biggest challenge, if I can get past the bushies.
And whatever it takes, and whatever it takes to give you that new perspective is cool. You know what I'm saying? Whatever it takes to give you that new, because I had to assume that, you know, at some level, if what I'm studying is true, then I'm still looking at my own consciousness.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
I have to really go, well, you know, at some level, whether I realize it or not, you know, I'm still a part of this experience. So I'm still creating this experience.
That's me out there.
Yeah, and so I have to, which is what you did. What did you do? You did what we're talking about in this section. You changed your focus. See, you didn't just focus on what he's done in the past and what he may do in the future. The forgiveness happened when you changed your focus, and therefore started to look at him from a more compassionate way, which means he might still be in office, but guess what? You're not giving yourself cancer, and you're not giving yourself high blood pressure. And you see what I'm saying? And that's what you got to get is that the person that you're mad at doesn't feel your anger. It's like the one that begins to click with you, it'll make a profound difference in how you feel about grievances. If you could ever really remind yourself that the person you're making yourself feel miserable about does not feel your pain, period, you would begin to go, how much sense does it make for me to make myself feel crazy about a person who's partying in Jamaica? Not even thinking about me. Might not even remember they had a relationship with me. And I have not had one for 15 years. And I really wanted one, but I denied myself because of my anger with a person that doesn't even know that I'm suffering. And you start thinking that way, and you watch your mind start working that way, you'll find yourself letting go of grievances you thought you could never let go of.
Girl.
Mm-hmm. Let me pass this around. So thank you for sharing with me, because this is how I made my living. Thank you.
I have a metaphor given to me in this thing that, for me anyway, really worked beautifully. So someone I hate, someone I have a problem with, or someone I feel has done me wrong, whatever the case may be. So instead of giving them the poison, I take it myself.
Right. I hate you, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to stab myself in the heart. That'll show you. I'm going to take this poison. That's exactly right, Charles. That's when I realized I was doing that, it was like a part of me went, that's crazy. That's totally crazy.
Because I'm guess who dies.
Mm-hmm.
Not them.
Not them. I'm the one that's in the hospital. I'm the one that hasn't had a loving relationship in 10 years. And that's one thing, to not have a relationship and don't want one. It's another thing to not have one just because you're afraid. That's not the same as, I feel so complete within myself that I don't necessarily need to have a special relationship. It's not a person who hasn't had one in 15 years because they're afraid. And sure, you're having more peace, but you're afraid. That's not the same as being healed. Just because I'm not doing it because I'm afraid, and I'm feeling better because the other ones were really horrible, and it has been more peaceful for me being by myself. But that's not the same as I've healed my perception of relationships. And sooner or later, you will have to, just for your own peace. You might not do it this life. You might do it in another one if you believe in reincarnation. You know what I'm saying? You might not do it this time around. That's okay. It's all right to take a vacation from your relationship challenges. You know. But you can have a perfect relationship today if you change your focus.
There you go.
If you change your focus, you can have the kind of relationships you've already... always. There are people out there just like you want who you can't see until you see the way they see.
then when you see the way I see, then we see each other. And that's what Jesus keeps saying in the Course all the time. If you will share my vision, you will have my experience. If you look at things the way I'm telling you to look at it, you will see it that way. But you can't see it this way, looking at it another way, expecting to get the results of seeing it this way, which is what I used to do. I would stay in my old mind getting mad because I wasn't getting the results that I would get if I saw it the way the Course was telling me to see. And then saying the Course didn't work. And then the Course said, well, I got that covered too, Earl. I'm so smart, I can counter anything you come up with to block your good. All you got to do is realize that there is a part of you that does see correctly, that is giving up the love all the time, even while you're trying to decide whether or not you're going to give up the love. And that part of you that's giving up the love all the time is creating really cool experiences for you that's going to be waiting for you as soon as you decide to see it that way. So that means that all the time you're generating incredibly wonderful experiences for yourself that you don't know about. And whenever you decide to change your focus, those experiences will be already there for you. And then you can have it instantly. That's why you can have the perfect relationship today. That's why, because if you change your way of looking at things, that relationship is already created for you by the part of you that loves. And so all you have to do is, it's like having that recorder already created, but I'm looking this way. And so all of a sudden I'm saying, where's the recorder? I'm praying for a recorder. Everybody doesn't have a recorder but me. God just doesn't love me because I don't see the recorder. See, I'm looking another way. And so the inner voice says, well, you've got to change your perspective, which is the same as saying just changing the way you're looking at it, which Jesus called turning the other cheek. Literally, turn the other cheek. There it is. Instantaneous manifestation. My God. Wow. And not only was it there all the time, it was earning interest. So I got even more waiting for me than I ever imagined. That's what's waiting for us. That's what's waiting for you, no matter how upset you are about something right now. There's a part of you that's cooking, that's smoking, that's awesome, that's doing cool stuff that you don't know about while you think you're having to figure out whether or not you're going to be loving. You know what I'm saying? And just think about this. While I'm figuring out whether or not I'm going to turn my head, I could be enjoying the stuff that's there if I turn my head. But I don't know if he deserves that. I don't know if I deserve that. I gotta study and I gotta make sure I really deserve this, and I gotta make sure I do everything just perfect so I can have what's already created for me. And this book is just telling you, it's teaching us how to do what? Remove the blocks to turning our head. It's about removing the blocks to turning my head so I can receive what I already have. Already there. And that's all I want for you. That's all I personally want for everybody in here, is what you truly deserve, which is complete happiness.
That's all I want for you.
That's all I want for you. And I can say that in total honesty.
Yeah. That's all I want for you.
Good. Great. Wonderful. Thank you.
And thank you, too.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'll see y'all next time. Next 7 o'clock tomorrow night is the next class. And Sunday at 1. And then we have a great service at 11 o'clock. You're invited to. And thank you for your support. Thank you for being you. And still, no, I'm available for one-on-one sessions. I've been an astrologer and numerologist for 30 years, and I mixed that with the Course in Miracles, and we can take a look at your ego and help remove some of the blocks, you know, because I guarantee you, your ego isn't original.
Would the Course support this position?
What position?
That in this meaning, this context, mm-hmm. you can never have enough information.
Yeah, because what we're doing now is receiving everything we need more and more until we don't need it. Yeah, this is our last lesson. The Course said this is your last lesson. I was so glad to hear that. Thank you. See y'all. Your final lesson. But tell me this. How many of you all were not turned on by the idea of learning forever? I thought I was the only one. Thank you. Somehow or another, I did not get turned on by the idea of there's another lesson, then 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 I go to another life, there's more lessons, there's more lessons, there's more lessons, there's more lessons. I loved it when the Course in Miracles said to me, this is your final lesson. And then it says, and then after this lesson, then you are a creator.
you're not making anymore, you're creating. Which he says is 100,000,000% cooler than making. To be able to say, can you see the difference between I got to go out and make this happen, and me going, let it be? Mm-hmm. See the difference? Mm-hmm. Being it is 1,000,000% easier than making it and doing it.
I learned that 1964 from a Beatles song, Let It Be. Why didn't I pay attention?
Exactly. The message keeps let coming through us, and then he even called himself the Beatles.
Let it be.
They're the Beatles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was like, think about it. Being is easier than doing, seeing, or making. If you will be yourself, remember, you just as well, this is a good one now, you got to tell yourself this, open it, you just as well be yourself because all the other places are taken. Sorry, I got Earl Curtis' place, you can't be me. Sorry, you see what I'm saying? You just as well be yourself because all the others are taken. There's nobody left for you to be. And you are cooler than you think. You're more awesome than you can imagine. And I get the chance to watch it. Yeah. Thank you. But let me be myself again. And that's what you say to your real friends. You walk away from them going, God, thank you for just letting me be. I got a call when I was on the way over here. A friend of mine on the phone. And it was just unbelievable how beautiful and how loving what she was sharing with me about some gratitude, about some things and just some loving things. It's like, and the thing that was so powerful was that it was all based on thank you for giving me a safe space and a safe place to be myself and to really express what I was feeling in that moment. Thank you for being totally safe, not letting me forget who I really am, or letting me really express myself and not forgetting who I really am, so that I could just go ahead and just spill all this crap that needed to come out of me, knowing that you would always remember who I really am. Because a lot of times, all we need to do is just really just get it out. And that isn't enough would be a healing. But we don't ever want to share our crap with people who think we are our crap, so that the next 10 times you see them, they think you the thing that you was talking about. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? It's like, you tell them you weren't feeling good one day, you still all right? 6 months later, you all right? 2 years later, you still okay? You know what I'm saying? They hold you to that image. And you want somebody you can say all of the venom, and they know that you are not what you're saying. Or if you needed to talk about how upset you were with your mate, they still know you love your mate. So therefore, you could go ahead and say everything you were mad about without feeling like, they think that you don't love them. You know what I mean? You want somebody that holds the light. Mm-hmm. Then you can let your stuff go and you'll be healed. But if you're stuffing everything because you're trying to be positive all the time, you're making yourself sick. I swear, I'm telling you. If you're trying to be positive all the time and you're trying to pretend you're not upset when you're really upset, and you're putting it under that rug, that's where disease and illness and stuff starts. It'd be much better to say, I'm mad as hell, I hate everybody, and not do nothing to everybody, than to say, I love everybody, and you're full of resentment. Mm-hmm. Which a lot of true students do. They love everybody. They'll tell you, I love everybody. There's nobody that I'm mad at. You know what I'm saying? If they're having one disaster, one catastrophe, one accident, one incident after another. And they don't get those. That obviously, you're not all right with everybody. Your life wouldn't be such chaos. It'll be better for you to say, I got a lot of subconscious anger that I didn't realize that I have. And I really want to be a loving person. See the difference?
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. Don't pretend now. You hurt yourself. I don't want y'all to hurt yourself. Okay?
All right.
All right.